This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR from the campus of Michigan State University. Thank you for joining us. Here are Spartan Dogs Timbo Gracchus, Todd T.J. Duckett, and Andre Hudson with fellow dog Caleb Thornhill.
Spartan Dog Podcast is brought to you by Simple Tee Printing. We make shirts, we give back. Making printing shirts simple. Check them out today at simple-tee.org. Conquest Health and Fitness. Reshape, rebuild, and renew your life. Go check them out at their website, conquesthealthandfitness.com. And Evergreen Car Wash and Detail. Ride like a champion today. Give them a call at 517-574-1598. They'll come to your house, your work, your place of business, worship, wherever. They'll pick your car up, and they'll have you riding right. We're joined today.
Welcome.
By, I would say, when you talk about Michigan State football, and there are families of Michigan State football, in my mind, you'd say the Bullas,
yep.
The Ducketts,
nice.
And the Thornhills.
Nice.
We're joined by Caleb Thornhill today.
Welcome. Welcome to Spartan Dog Podcast.
Yes. I appreciate it. I've been listening to you guys a lot, and I just appreciate you having me on the show.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah. This good is to have good. You in the studio, man.
Yeah, man. So, before you even said that, it didn't really register that. I mean, I got the chance to play with your brother, Josh. And he was a leader. He was a staple. And then when I got a chance to watch you play, it was a lot of the same similar qualities. I believe that the younger brother is always better in what we do.
Of course
you do. One love, Tico. But just to jump right into it, and since I know, we all know Josh, did he have a little bit of influence? And I know about your father. Maybe tell us a little bit about your history.
Well, they definitely had influence, let's be honest. My brother, watching him work day in and day out with you and in the weight room and having access to seeing what it's like to really grind and get to that next level, I knew from the very get-go I needed to step my game up a notch in order to play for Michigan State University and be coached under Ken Manny. We know how that is.
Yes.
So, yeah, definitely there was influence by my father just in terms of hard work, work ethic, and just doing the right things in and on and off the football field in order to be successful. And you know, guys like you, Andre as well, just to see you guys growing up, you don't even know you had an influence on me. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy is a guy that I look up to as I'm going through high school, watching the lefty just turn around and just make it look so easy. Mm-hmm. But it was hard work and dedication on that court.
It was,
that
definitely.
You put in. So,
definitely.
You know, to bring it back to what TJ was saying, brother had a great influence, a father, but also all the Spartans across that I watched growing up had a huge influence on me.
What being a Lansing kid, did it make it harder to stay focused on what you needed to do in the classroom, on the field, and off the field to, you know, stay out of trouble with being home and having access to everything that's comfortable to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was definitely hard growing up, Tim, in terms of just to bring it back, really Lansing Eastern High School. I'm talking about Lansing Public Schools. You know, to be honest with you, there are people in those schools when I was growing up, you know, and things may not have changed as much, that really college is an afterthought. You know, it's not talked about, you know. So to have that sphere of influence around you growing up, luckily I had a great household that talked about the importance of education. But, you know, for most of my friends that didn't make it to college, man, it was tough, you know, to get out of that environment, really, from an academic standpoint, let alone from a football standpoint.
Yeah, that's pretty important for a lot of listeners out there. I think, you know, that message, that's a good message for the kids out there to keep, you know, keep your heads up and keep those goals out there, because you might not be getting that specific teaching or pushing to make it to that next level. But if you have that desire to make it yourself, I mean, there's a good chance you can get it done. You know, you got to have a little bit of self-commitment on your own terms to make that thing happen.
What, Caleb, what's one of your greatest, fondest memories on the football field here, playing here in Spartan Stadium?
Practice or game? Practice not so much, but no, I'm joking.
Yeah, you're probably
really.
Right.
You go back to Wisconsin 2004, my redshirt freshman year. That game, Ron Stanley was starting, but I was the third linebacker in that game when we had certain packages. Like, you know, Wisconsin's a big running team. They come out too tight and run the rock. So I was in that third linebacker. Well, Ron Stanley went down. I ended up playing the whole entire game, not even knowing I was going to play that. So fourth down, 1 yard to go. They're on the goal line. We had a couple goal line stops that game. They were number four in the country. Mm-hmm. We were like 5-5, I believe, at the time. And, you know, I saw a gap open wide up, and I just shot through it. Next thing you know, I'm making the tackle on the backfield. I mean, as a redshirt freshman, just to have that moment when, remember the sign, we must protect this house, and the student section is right on our goal line, and just the chills that goes through your body. You have all these seniors looking at you, knowing that you stepped up to help the team
right.
win that game against the number four team in the nation. You know, there's nothing like that. And really just that it wasn't about me. It was just about, dang, like, we just stopped the number four team in the nation.
Right.
And I was a part of it. That was the cool part.
How incredible is that, though? Something that, I mean, it probably took half a second for you to shoot that gap. But how long did it seem, you know? I mean, it's like it's fourth and one. Yeah. Everything is on the line, and boom.
Before the play started, it seemed forever because you're trying to figure out, like, all right, we got to stop. What am I going to do to try to make a play? But, you know, you go back to your fundamentals. It's like, boom, you're locked in. You read your keys. You see the guard pull, and boom. The next thing you know it's going to there's going to be a hole there, and you shoot through it, and you just trust you're watching your film, you know,
right.
and really studying. That's why you study the game, so you can execute when the time comes. And
absolutely.
That's what it's all about. So it's fun, you know, watching TJ. I mean, it was almost like, you know, when I watched him, I was more excited, to be honest with you, to watch you guys when my brother played with TJ in the I was at the game where he caught that touchdown. Obviously, he talked about that quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, but watching that moment was almost, you look back, I was happier that time than I was actually on the field. I don't know what it was. Like, when you guys would lose a game, I'd be more depressed in high school than I would when I was actually playing the game. It was really weird. You know, I just, it's hard to explain, but
I was the same way. I was the same way with my brother, actually. Yeah. I think it's, I mean, obviously family's involved, and
yeah.
The wins and the losses of the family trickle mm-hmm. down, especially if you look at an older sibling mm-hmm. and you want to emulate them. And, you know, speaking about with Caleb, I remember Caleb as young. Just, I mean, I threw track. I ran track against Josh in high school. And so I'd been hearing about him. And then one day we're in the weight room, and this big kid walks in the weight room, and it's Josh's little brother. I mean, he's pushing up the same weight we are. I mean, it's just like, wow, okay. I mean, it was crazy. But now to see his maturity process from high school kid, younger brother of a teammate, to coming to Michigan State and holding down the fort. Holding down the fort, and now to see what you're doing now. And I think it's very fitting to go into what you're doing now, speaking on the fourth and one play you had against Wisconsin.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a Spartan Dog podcast conversation between former Spartan football player and current Miami Dolphins Director of Player Development, Caleb Thornhill, and Spartan Dogs Andre Hudson, Todd T.J. Duckett, and Timbo Gracchus.
This is Spartan Dog podcast radio with Timbo Gracchus, Andre Hudson, and Ty Duckett, and our special guest is Caleb Thornhill. Caleb, tell us a little bit about 4th-and-1 football camp. Give us that. Lay it all out there.
That might have been the best transition.
That's the best segue ever
in my life.
Beautiful. Okay,
that was great. So that's a critical play. That's a critical play in the game, right? That 4th-and-1 was a very critical play. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just like life. There are critical plays all around us, and we have to execute, all right? And it's a critical stage for the young men's life that I'm involved with. We target 9th and 10th graders that are under-resourced. I don't want to say at-risk. I want to say under-resourced. Don't have the access that other people have at other schools.
I like
okay?
that under-resourced.
Under-resourced,
like
man.
That.
And they're at promise. They're not at risk.
Yeah,
they're at
I
promise.
Like that.
And that's
like
the way that. We look at these kids. And they usually come from single-parent households, first-generation college goers. And usually lack resources. I mean, you understand when they turn in their essays, they have to write 2 essays to get in our camp, and they write the stories about what their background is like and what they're dealing with at home when they don't even have the lights on, they're struggling to get something to eat. You kind of shed tears, you know, as you're reading them with the staff, my core staff that goes over and reads these. So we select 44 student athletes from around the Lansing, Detroit, Three Rivers, Flint, mostly Lansing kids that come to the camp. But we're trying to, you know, obviously reach out in different parts of the state to get more kids involved. But we also have to reject 50 kids that need to be here too. And that's the hard part.
Yeah.
We can't let everybody in because, you know, we do offer it for free, but we only raise so much money. So we're just trying to continue our efforts there. But just to give you an idea about the camp, we do not only football training. This is not just a football camp. We do ACT prep. We know how important that is in terms of getting into college. Life skills workshop. We just had one today with the college admissions process in terms of LCC and MSU speaking. How much does it cost? How do I get financial aid? The kids were asking great questions and questions that they haven't had answered at home. So it's important to bring that access to them. Like, hey, can everybody get financial aid? They don't even know if they can get financial aid.
Right.
So just providing that access, right? And then we'll also do self-identity. We'll do a resume building workshop. Everybody will create a resume, print it, take it home. We'll do a job interview where they're interviewing back and forth. We will also have some fun as well. We'll do a talent show, pool time. And actually, the MVP of our camp will be flown to Dubai with the winners from East Texas and Jacksonville for free.
Nice.
So they're going to Dubai like the MVP, which is crazy. So you talk about access. That's what we're trying to provide them. And that when we leave the camp, we give them Tony Dungy's book, Uncommon. Okay, and they already have their mentors before they leave the camp. We'll break up into those groups tonight. And so each mentor will have three kids. So when we leave the camp, we'll have reading assignments for them in that Tony Dungy book in terms of, hey, you'll read chapters three for this month. Then we'll have recap questions. So you have not just like, hey, how you doing in school, blah, blah, blah. We're talking about something that they can really improve their life. You know, the Tony Dungy book is called Finding Your Path to Significance. So we're just trying to help them identify themselves beyond the football field. And really talk about who are they as a person and why is education so important? Even if you do make it to the NFL, you're probably done by your 25th. I mean, you understand. You get it. Just trying to explain to these kids when they write in their applications, hey, I want to be an NFL player, NBA. Right. And then you show them the statistics, and they're like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, first things first, build your foundation on education, and then the rest will take care of itself. So that's what the camp is built upon.
How did you get involved from the start?
Access to people.
Yeah.
Darren Roberts, who's the founder, met him when I was an intern in Detroit after I finished up at Michigan State doing football operations and player development. He was an assistant coach. Darren Roberts comes from East Texas, Mount Pleasant, where he held the first 4th-and-1 camp. He originally went to Harvard Law School. He went to University of Texas, then Harvard Law School, decided law school wasn't for him, and he decided he wanted to be a football coach. So he volunteered all around the country, drove everywhere, knocked on doors of NFL facilities just to talk to people. Finally got in with Gunther Cunningham, and he's been a coach since. He coaches in Cleveland right now. But when he was in Detroit, he talked to me about this camp, and I kind of helped him out with the life skills because I did some of the development stuff when I was with you, Tim, at Michigan State as a GA. So once I saw the video, I sat in my office in Miami. It was in August. He sent me the video, and I said, you know what? It's a done deal. I'm bringing this camp to Michigan State. Don't care what it takes. Don't care what it costs. And honest to God, you know, he really came down. I'm a man of faith, and he really came down and blessed me with the resources to make this camp effective and efficient. I didn't have the money 2 months before the camp, and you know what? He gave that to me, too, you know. So it just worked itself out, and just believing in it and trusting it and know that it'll be delivered. So
yeah.
It's been awesome.
Yeah,
It's changed my life. It changed the people that help out my camp, their lives. It might change the camp counselors more than it changes the kids.
Right.
You know, that's what's important. So my core staff is amazing, but I just love it. It's during my vacation. I wouldn't have it any other way. This is my best vacation of the week. That's what I say. I'm flying right from here to training camp. So this is my vacation before training camp.
I think, you know, and I've stopped by, you know, the previous couple years to see it. And I think the coolest thing that I've started to notice is you have kids that are coming back. And they're going through the program 2 or 3 times in a row, and that kind of shows you the value of that this is bringing to their lives. And they're starting to really set a culture and a tone of making themselves better and then making that next crop better. So it's been cool to see this program build from the first year to now, and I don't really foresee it stopping anytime soon.
I hope not.
Unless you put it into it. But that kind of transitions into a little bit of what you're doing in your career. It's almost similar, but for an adult-level professional athlete. You kind of alluded to a little bit of working with the Lions and then going to the Dolphins. Kind of talk a little bit about your player development path and kind of the things you've kind of implemented for the NFL players as they're trying to develop.
I mean, just hearing everything that you're talking about and when you share about what you're doing now, it sounds like a lot of the skills that NFL players don't have when they've completed years of college, years of professional, and they enter the real world without these, me being one of them. And something I want to get back to after you answer that question is talking about the transition process, which you may be able to help that. But these things that these kids are learning now, before they even hit that, I mean, those are skills that are going to be vital.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a Spartan Dog podcast conversation between former Spartan football player and current Miami Dolphins Director of Player Development, Caleb Thornhill, and Spartan Dogs Andre Hudson, Todd T.J. Duckett, and Timbo Gracchus.
You're listening to the Spartan Dog podcast radio. Tim, Andre, Todd, and our special guest is Caleb Thornhill. So tell us a little bit now about what it is that you're doing, with your job, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. My job, yeah.
Yeah, your job.
Not really a job.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. It's fun. I enjoy it. It's long hours, don't get me wrong. You've been in the business. You know how long the hours can be for everybody in the building. Mm-hmm. But the job is good. I've been blessed. You know, the journey there was amazing. And it took me a long time to tell. I won't tell that. But with the job itself, it's really what I do for 4th and 1, just like you said, mm-hmm. except for professional athletes. The transition in, you know, I just got done finishing my rookie success program, phase 1 and phase 2 when the rookies get drafted. You know, that's really up to each player engagement director of each club. Each one has one of me, mm-hmm. and they get to control that content when guys get drafted. So I really shape my programming in terms of what guys struggle with. I mean, the main two problems in the NFL are usually the relationships, whether it be family, friends, and financial, you know, and which has a part in that, those problems. But, you know, to develop them with the skills that they don't have when they enter, just like you said, they don't have many skills, especially financially. You're asking a 22-year-old to make decisions that usually a 31-year-old would be making in terms of when he gets enough income to make decisions with a financial advisor and do things of that nature and really get a grasp of credit and you're building it. And these guys are expected to learn these things right away without having any access. I did a survey with my rookies. I have 28 of them. Only 12 of them have had financial education in college. Okay, mm-hmm. They don't have access to that information, so it's my job. That's why I do a whole week, is to give them that information and really work with them on a one-on-one basis, mm-hmm. which is why I love what I do, is that I'm able to give them access to something that can really save their life long-term. It's not about right now. I tell them, I don't care if you're here 1 month. I don't care if you're 2 months. I just want to give you the tools to be successful long-term. You could be here 10 years. I still want to give you the tools to be successful even when you leave this game, and that's what I'm here to do. I mean, I tell them all the time, I wish you the best career, but end of the day, I just want you to be the best man you can be, the best father, the best husband, mm-hmm. and that's what I want you to do.
That's awesome, man.
So that's what it's about, and that's my passion, man. That's what drives me. That's what wakes me up every morning, is really just engaging, educating, and empowering individuals to reach their full potential. You know, it's not about me. I don't want anything to be about me. It's about individuals and the impact you can have on people's life when you leave this earth, and that's what I learned from my dad, you know, which mm-hmm. is very powerful. And once you figure out who you are, man, life just kind of takes its course, and you just work hard towards your dream and your calling, and it just happens. But with my job, man, just being able to work with these players and really develop them, even in the offseason when we're doing internships. I had a couple guys do a job shadow, EA Sports, you know. You give them that access, and you have pro Hollywood boot camp we have, you know. So go send them out to Hollywood to see if they like film. You know, a couple business ones. You know, Reggie Bush wanted to do the Hollywood and the business. Andy wanted to go to Harvard. I'm like, slow down, brother. One thing at a time. Let's just finish that
undergrad.
You know, so it's fun working with these guys, man. And it's my job to excite them about those opportunities, you know. And I'm not doing my job if I'm not doing that, you know. So that's why when I talk to you guys, I'm excited to talk about it because it's my passion. I love doing it, you know. So, you know, there's more tasks and roles that go along with my job, but I don't want to sit here all day and talk about the tedious stuff that, like, drives you nuts. But I'm just talking about the fun part right now. So that's what I love to do, you know. And TJ probably had some of these when you were going through the league. Some of your player engagement directors or development when you were there may have been good. Some of them may have been a little bit – stand up. So maybe you didn't maximize the person at the club. You know, maybe, you know, they all differ. So, I mean.
Well, a lot of that, a lot of that too is the player not being in the place to understand it.
Mm-hmm,
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you're talking about a young man mm-hmm. with a lot of money living a gladiator's dream, and you're telling me I need to think about my life after? I mean, mm-hmm. you got to be in a place to accept and to receive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people aren't because they've never had their eyes open to what are finances.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get hurt. I'm invincible. I mean, these things they don't talk about. So, I mean, I'm sure I had plenty of people who said everything. Did a great job teaching, educating, or at least talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
But did I absorb it? Did I take it in? Did I believe what they were saying? Was I saying, "No, that's not going to happen to me,"
mm-hmm.
type of thing? Yeah. And that's where the life experiences start to open up and start to see. So with that, for, because I'm sure you had a dream to play in the league. I'm sure you had a dream to continue football. I'm sure you didn't just stop and say, "Okay, football is done. Let me just go ahead and hang up my cleats." What was your transition like? When you realized the game was over, refocus, reestablish your passion, reestablish your drive. What was that like, and how did you go through that?
It was tough. It was tough, you know, and I don't think there's any right way to deal with it. I believe the people around you will help. You have a good sphere of influence and people that support you. That's why the university is so important. I mean, we could do more here in terms of developing these young men long term. But in terms of my transition, you know, when I got done, I decided I was not going to train after the last bowl game. And I was like, you know what, I'm just happy to get a good night's sleep. I'm good. Like, you know. I went to Mark Hollis. I knew he was going to be the AD, kind of strategic move on my end. Was like, I need an internship going into my senior year, and I kind of knocked on Hollis's door with him being in sales and marketing and really understanding the path that he was on, and worked under him, just doing some little stuff after conditioning, you know, kind of breaking into like what the work atmosphere is like. You know, it's like we don't have any exposure. Like we get 5 weeks off during the entire year. Like, how are we going to do internships, mm-hmm. you know? So getting that was good. That kind of broke the ice with the transition, kind of like, okay, this is what the real world is like kind of thing, you know, mm-hmm. just a little bit. And then once I decided I was completely done, I'm like, all right, well, what's next?
Right.
I was like, well, I guess I'll get my master's, you know? That sounds good. You know, I didn't have a direct path at that point. You know, I knew I wanted to help players because I've seen them struggle. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know how to do that, though, right now. So I kind of did some research. But in the meantime, I'm like, I need to get my master's. So I just knocked on Hollis's door one day and basically just asked, you know, can I apply as your GA? I don't know if there's a position open for this or not, but right. can I apply for it? And he's like, yeah, you can apply for it, you know. So you talk about access and really doing the right things while you're playing and affording you opportunities, and that afforded me an opportunity to really redefine myself. I think that was the moment where I really didn't even find it at that point. You know, even through grad school, I'm still trying to define who I am. You're going through some, everybody goes through their problems, but you're going through some things, and you really are trying to figure out, hey, what am I on this earth for? And in that, you know, in the process of my dad also passing away, you know, so you're kind of lost a mentor, and my main mentor, my best friend, and you're like, well, what am, you know, my brother's on a path, you know, he's doing good. He's always been smart, and I'm trying to figure out mine, you know. He's always set the standard, and it's like, how do I reach towards that? So when I finally got afforded an opportunity to work for Detroit as an intern, and now I go from a star football player, per se, to driving and picking up pro athletes on a shuttle bus.
Right.
And driving them to the practice. I mean, you want to talk about a humble pie?
Yeah.
I had to buy 18 of those. Training camp. I was so full from those humble pies,
right.
man. And it really forced me to grow up and say, Caleb, what do you want out of your life? And really, that's when I was like, man, I really need to get into helping these athletes. When you see when I saw the locker room, I was like, I want to work with them. And I started to develop skills there, really, to prepare myself for the job in Miami, which I didn't even know was coming. I mean, would I say I was fully prepared for that job? No, but I had the passion to figure out what I needed to do to be the best at my job. So really, TJ, I went through some times. I went through a roller coaster, man. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, I went through ups. I went through downs where I'm like, dang, I don't know what I'm about to do. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's hard because, you know, so regular students, they got 4 years to figure it out, five. Mm-hmm. They can do internships. They can have access to understanding what career path they want to go down. Yeah. We're playing a game. This isn't life. We're playing a game, and we have to figure it out during that time. That's our up to us, you know. But like you said, it can be hard when you're got money or and even in college when you're just feeling good. You're feeling good about yourself.
Yeah.
You're sitting in the back of the class feeling real good until you're out and you're like, dang, I wish I'd have been in the front, man.
I mean, even in college at some point, you don't have a lot of responsibility, so it's almost like the pros. I mean, everything is given to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think some key points that you said I think is great is you took initiative. You know, you thought about your future. You went up, you called Mark Hollis and said, hey, I need an opportunity. And I think that's key for listeners out there to hear that, you know, you got to take a step. If you want to make it to the next level, you got to mm-hmm. put it on your shoulders yourself and go out there and get it done. And I think, I mean, that's awesome. I think your whole journey's been awesome. I think we all can relate to that because we've all had our own roller coaster rides of ups and downs and kind of lost and trying to figure out what to do next. I think it's just a general thing for an athlete, whether you come out of college or whether you're finishing the pros, there's always that period where you don't know how to transition. And I think the best thing you can do is take that step, you mm-hmm. know, step out there and say, hey, I need to do something for myself. And I think that's what you did. That's great, man. That's a great story.
All right. So before we let you get out of here, we always like to have our guests leave our listeners with a bit of wisdom, something they can share. It can, you know, it can be anything, but it can be something that's important to you that you want to make sure that you get out there, not only for our mm-hmm. listeners, but for us to kind of steal a little bit of knowledge of you. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say that I'm going to ask a question right now, and then I'm going to pause for a couple seconds. And as you're listening, I just wanted you to think about your answer for a couple seconds. So I would ask, where is the greatest amount of wealth in this world? And I'll stop there and let you answer. And then the answer to that question is, you're probably thinking of a place, but it's not. It's in the cemetery, because most people are buried without reaching their full potential, okay? Mm. And full potential, I want everybody to maximize who they are. Potential becomes a bad word after a while. Okay, once you're given information, you have to take advantage of it. And really, you turn that potential into reality. So that's what I want everybody to do, is really reach their full potential and go to the grave empty.
Wow. That's beautiful.
we're going to end like that. Spartan Dog Podcast. We thank Caleb for joining us today.
Thank you, Caleb. Appreciate it. Yes, thank you guys.
Much.
You guys are somebody that I looked up to, so you're a part of my journey, and I appreciate that.
Mm. And we need you to go out, like our Facebook page, Spartan Dogs Podcast on Facebook. Go to iTunes and search Spartan Podcast, all one word. Download all of our episodes.
Where can they learn more about your organization?
We have a website, the number 4-T-H-A-N-D, then the number 1.org. So it's 4thand1.org.
Spartan Dog Podcast. Thanks again, Kay, for joining us.
Thank you, brother.
Thank
yes,
you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Go green.
Go white.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
That was former Spartan football player and current Miami Dolphins Director of Player Development Caleb Thornhill talking with Spartan Dog Podcast host Todd T.J. Duckett, Andre Hudson, and Timbo Gracchus. To hear their conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Up next, Dr. Kirk Heinze is here to tell us all about the At Home on the Great Lakes exhibit at Shedd Aquarium in Chicago.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Roger German. Roger is an executive vice president for the world-renowned Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. Roger also oversees Shedd's Great Lakes initiatives. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Roger, you've got a new exhibit that you've rolled out that's, from what I can tell, is absolutely amazing. In fact, I can't wait to get to Chicago to check it out personally. But tell us about your new exhibit.
Well, it's a fantastic new exhibit because one of the things that we do here at Shedd Aquarium is we talk about amazing biodiversity around the world, but we have these amazing Great Lakes in our own backyard. And so it's very exciting to be able to talk about the Great Lakes, all of the issues that are surrounding the Great Lakes that, you know, many of us appreciate so well, and then highlight some of the charismatic animals, because it's easy to think, that's, you know, Lake Michigan, that's, you know, Lake Erie, you know, Lake Huron, brown and silver fish, brown and yellow fish. But actually, there's a lot more diversity that in the Great Lakes, and which is one of the highlights for this new exhibit. So we're excited for folks to come down from Michigan and come check it out. So, but it is really just amazing to think about the homes that we rely on, you know, the quality of life that we rely on, the homes that the animals rely on. And then again, as you put all that package together for these magnificent kind of one-time gifts from Mother Nature and what we can do to protect and preserve them.
Well, folks who are coming to Shedd, I mean, and they come to this your new exhibit, what are a few of the specifics that they can expect to see?
Well, I think one of the things that everyone will notice in the new Great Lakes exhibit is right in the center of the exhibit is a brand new sturgeon touch tank. So folks are going to get a chance to roll up their sleeves, kind of put their hands in some 55-degree water and touch these amazing prehistoric, kind of very, again, charismatic, highlight iconic Great Lakes animals. We've got three sturgeon in there right now. We'll continue to add more, but those three are upwards of 4 feet and beyond, and larger, and it's just amazing. You know, even just a few days that it's been open, we literally have, you know, just, you know, hear the oohs and ahs and the kids screaming and, you know, the parents going, that's awesome. I did not realize that that was right here in my own backyard.
Well, I don't know that I've ever touched a sturgeon, but I hear from folks who've caught them, they kind of, it's kind of a sandpapery type of scale, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, kind of that sandpapery, little rough kind of texture. You know, they definitely have some hard kind of scales on them as well, some ridges, and but no, they're very amazing. And so you'll notice that right away. That'll draw your attention. But as you work your way around the entire exhibit, you'll see, you know, some of the native fish that are here. We've got 60 species of animals that are in this At Home on the Great Lakes exhibit. But you'll also see a few other animals that I think are, you know, are unique, and they're great storytellers. They're animals that we don't want in the Great Lakes, like the Asian carp, like the sea lamprey. But we have those on display to talk about, you know, why it's important to do things like clean your boats before you move from lake to lake or river to river to keep invasive species from spreading. We talk about how we're all connected. So while the Asian carp story is, you know, seems to be centered mostly around the Chicago waterways, why should folks in Michigan care? Why should folks on the eastern end of the Great Lakes care? We are all connected, and we've got to make you know, strategic decisions that, you know, protect and preserve, again, these you know, these natural beauties.
Well, underscoring and undergirding all of Shedd's Great Lakes initiatives is this whole conservation emphasis. On you have four areas specifically. You've just mentioned them: ecological separation, invasive species, native species, and then the whole business of habitat restoration. But those areas are sort of the underpinnings of your conservation ethos, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The one nice thing about the exhibit itself is it brings all four of those together. But yet when you're not in the exhibit and we're around the Great Lakes Basin, that's exactly what we're doing. We're, you know, talking to folks about ecological separation, and it's not just about those Chicago waterways. I mean, there are many waterways and many other issues throughout you know, the basin, a lot of issues, you know, in the you know, in Michigan as well. Then you look at you know, celebrating native life. That exhibit not only captures that, but, you know, how you look at your own backyard. And we've got some online capabilities for folks to share stories and animals that they see. Invasives, we're starting to look at what's the next emerging invasive, something that everybody wants to make sure that we're not just always putting all of our eggs in one basket, but what could potentially be out there through ballast water, through other waterways, and then obviously habitat restoration, you know, and what can we do, you know, to team up with folks, you know, around the Great Lakes Basin, and, you know, in Michigan, here in Illinois, Illinois and other places, you know, to get kids out there, to get corporations out there and really doing what we can to, you know, kind of, again, restore this kind of natural beauty. And I keep bringing it up, but it's, you know, when you think of the Great Lakes, I mean, it's hard to put it in context, but it's one giant kind of international park. It, you know, is on the grand scale of the Grand Canyon, and yet we don't always see it that way. But it's an amazing treasure that we have in our backyard and obviously provides 90% of, you know, our fresh water here for North America. So it's a pretty important resource for quality of life as well.
I'm talking with Roger German, who's Executive Vice President for Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. He also oversees Shedd's Great Lakes initiatives. And among other things, we're talking about a wonderful new exhibit called At Home on the Great Lakes. You also have sort of a, if I can use the analogy, a CNN feature. You have a breaking news monitor as part of this exhibit.
We do. There's two really unique things about this exhibit, other things about this exhibit. One is breaking news. And what is unique about that is so folks would, you know, who come through our doors, so we've got 2 million plus people who come through the Shedd Aquarium's doors, we want to make sure that we're doing breaking news, keeping current, keeping relevant about issues that are happening around the Great Lakes Basin. So, you know, what's unique about that is you could walk into the doors here on the kind of the southwestern shores of Lake Michigan in the city of Chicago, yet you can learn about what's happening in Michigan through this breaking news because, you know, we're tied into a lot, you know, the governor's office and the Great Lakes Initiative and other programs that are based out of Michigan and beyond. So it's nice to keep educating folks about what's currently happening. And then there's another interesting feature that we have, kind of a video wall montage that is constantly changing with images around the Great Lakes Basin. And so you'll see a lot of images that connect us all together that are similar, but a lot of unique images, you know, including a big Welcome to Michigan sign. And what we're trying to do is two things with the exhibit. One is connect people to animals. It's a little disconnect with we're becoming much more urban, you know, as a society. So let's connect people with animals to inspire them to care. But also through this exhibit, through breaking news that you mentioned, as well as this video wall, we're trying to connect people around the Great Lakes Basin, again, to rally around the commonalities that we have and not necessarily get into the, you know, the politics or the regional territories of it, but that we're all in this together. And so we're highlighting stories from across the basin and especially our friends in Michigan.
Well, one of your, and you have many partners, research institutions, nonprofits. I mean, the list is very impressive. But we had some folks from the Alliance for the Great Lakes, one of your partners, on the show not long ago. What's sort of striking to me, Roger, is how all of these different entities, and there are a lot of them focused on the Great Lakes, but seem to be pulling together, trying not to duplicate efforts, sharing information. It sounds like this exhibit pulls a lot of that together.
You're exactly right. That is one of the goals of this exhibit and one of the kind of the strengths, I guess, that we can bring to this kind of suite of Great Lakes folks who are doing some amazing Great Lakes work. You're right. I've heard numbers of 200 plus organizations that are focused on the Great Lakes around the, you know, around the basin. But how do we all come together around a common cause? And, you know, I think, you know, Shedd's, we're going to do our part. We've got great partners, and you mentioned the Alliance for the Great Lakes, you know, and others that are out there that we work very closely with. But I also think, you know, there's this kind of renewed effort that, you know, I'll give some credit to, you know, the White House and the administration here, you know, of putting some focus on the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, kind of having a rallying cry from the federal government and across the border as well. And it seemed to kind of also focus, you know, where people are, you know, looking at their energies. And I think, you know, I'm not going to say for the first time, but it's, you know, definitely in those early stages, a lot of these Great Lakes organizations who have been doing great work over the years feel like the momentum is really starting to pick up and, you know, maybe we can kind of get this over the, you know, over the hill, so to speak, and keep doing more and more, you know, for these amazing, again, natural treasures. I have the benefit and the honor to serve on the new U.S. EPA Great Lakes Advisory Board. So it's the very first advisory board which advises the U.S. EPA Administrator, which advises the White House and the Interagency Task Force, looking at the next action plan for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. So we just had our first meeting a few weeks ago. Second meeting was yesterday. And then we're going to, you know, continue to work throughout the summer and for the fall to, you know, to really look at what the next 4 to 5 years of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative should be focusing on, where those, you know, kind of critical resources and dollars should be, where the emphasis should be. So it's, you know, it's a very, you know, humbling privilege to be on this, you know, one of 18 members who, you know, who's on this national board. But it really is, again, like you said, this bipartisan focus to really do what we can, you know, to rally around these lakes.
Well, and while you're doing your good work advising the EPA on our Great Lakes, folks can come to the Shedd Aquarium. I don't know anybody who hasn't been to the Shedd Aquarium, to be honest with you, that I've ever talked to. But at home on the Great Lakes, it is, along with your other original galleries, I want to make sure we get this in, it's included in the general admissions price, right?
Correct. Absolutely. So you can come see it for a very minimal cost or on one of our many kind of discount free days. Come check it out.
Absolutely, check it out, and I'm looking forward to doing that with my wife, and probably going to bring a granddaughter along for the experience. I've been talking with Roger German, who's executive vice president for the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. He also oversees the Great Lakes initiatives. Roger, a pleasure to talk to you.
Great talking to you. Thanks for everything.
You're listening to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Your host is Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, our next guest from Shedd is Dr. Philip Willink, who joined Shedd in 2012 as the senior research biologist for the aquarium's Daniel B. Harther Center for Conservation and Research. Dr. Willink is leading Shedd's efforts to develop, among other things, a comprehensive evaluation of Illinois' list of threatened and endangered species. Dr. Willink, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Before we get into some of your specific research projects, from your perspective, we just talked to Roger about the At Home on the Great Lakes exhibit. It just sounds like a wonderful exhibit. I know you were involved in putting that together. From a researcher's perspective, what's your take on the new exhibit?
Well, so a lot of our research is applied in one way or another, so we do a lot of conservation work. And one of the biggest hurdles we have when doing conservation is getting people to appreciate and understand what we're trying to work on. When you're working on trees or birds, people can go to a park and see them fairly easily. But we tend to have a lot of trouble with the Great Lakes because people will look at a lake or a river and they look at the surface and they see that, but their vision usually stops there. So we're always, you know, have this problem of trying to get people to see what's below the surface. And that's one of the great things about working at an aquarium is that we have these exhibits that people can come in and see what's actually happening under the water. And when they see that, they're typically fascinated by that. They get interested in that. They begin to appreciate that. And then once they begin to appreciate that, they're more interested in conserving what they see, conserving aquatic habitats. And then that's how our research sort of ties in. How do we conserve what's there?
Well, one of your current research projects, a project you're leading, is an evaluation of Illinois' list of threatened and endangered species, which I gather falls in the major emphasis area of native species.
It is. That's really the focus of all our projects, looking at native species and sort of the impacts that are, you know, how are their populations doing? And it's not necessarily just threatened and endangered, but also rare. So we're kind of looking at the rare ones. And when I'm out looking for anything, I tend to look at the whole community of fish. My particular specialty is fishes. And we kind of assess the community, see what changes are happening over time, and then why are those populations changing? Are they losing their habitat? Is that why we see declines, or are they actually getting better? So we tend to focus on the rare ones, which is what I'm doing, like in southern Lake Michigan, and then trying to see how they're doing, how healthy are the populations, and then what can we do about that?
Well, I know this probably varies from species to species, but in general, how are some of these rare species doing in our Great Lakes?
And you know what? You're right. It always varies. It varies by lake by lake. So we often talk about Great Lakes, but it's such a huge ecosystem, you know, one of the largest freshwater ecosystems on the planet. And so every lake has its own story. And every part of the lake, every bay also has its own story. And we're seeing good things and bad things. For example, there are some fish in southern Lake Michigan that I know best, something called a banded killifish that is considered quite rare, but when we go out and look for it, we usually find it. And we think what's going on is that when a lot of people work on the Great Lakes, they tend to be fixated by the really big fish, looking for salmon or sturgeon or something like that, which are important. But a lot of the rare fish tend to be small, and they tend to be overlooked because the collecting gear isn't appropriate or we're looking in the wrong places. And so there's some rare fish that are turning out to be more common than anybody realized. But then on the other hand, there are some others. For instance, around here we have something called a mottled sculpin, which is found throughout the Great Lakes. But an invasive species has moved in called the round goby, K came in the 1990s, early 1990s, and they tend to compete for spawning sites. And the round gobies, unfortunately, are better at it than the sculpins, and so we're seeing dramatic declines in those. So in some instances, they're doing well, and others, they're not. You know, that's part of the problem. The story we see in one park can be very different than what we see in another. And that, from an academic perspective, that makes it fascinating. But from a policy perspective, that makes it that much harder to deal with because, you know, every river can have a slightly different story with what's going on there. And that just means that it's a lot more work to figure out what's going on and then a lot more work to figure out what's the appropriate way to approach that.
My guest is Dr. Philip Willink, who is the senior research biologist for the Shedd Aquarium, the world-famous Shedd Aquarium in Chicago. Philip, you've been studying not only native species but invasive species for quite some time. One of the topics, as you might imagine, that has been of greatest interest to our listeners is the Asian carp saga, the threat of the Asian carp. And we recently heard because of flooding, and read in some media reports, because of the flooding in Chicago, et cetera, that there may be new developments in terms of the Asian carp making its way into Lake Michigan. What can you tell us from your perspective there in Chicago? Can you give us an update?
So the good news is not much has really changed, for better or for worse. The carp, as far as we can tell, have not moved this spring, have not moved considerably at all. If there was flooding in Chicago, but not in areas where the carp were. So that's the good news. And the bad news is there's always the possibility that the carp could move around. So if we get another major rain event, so it was a month or so ago that we had all this flooding, there's always the possibility that we could have more flooding, and that may cause some problems. Now, there's a number of fences and barriers in the way, and so far those seem to be highly effective, but there's always the debate as to how well they're going to work the next time.
And then we have the ongoing issues with the Army Corps of Engineers and lawsuits and all those sorts of things, trying to get a plan in place to make sure that these carp never get into our Great Lakes.
Right, right. And there's certainly a lot of discussion about that, particularly over the past 2 or 3 years. And I would say that over the past couple of years, there's been a great deal of hysteria about it and a lot of knee-jerk reactions about what to do to these types of things. And I think that kind of slowed some things down. But now I think that people are calming down and are looking at it more rationally. I'm a bit more optimistic that something's going to happen about this. The drawback is doing anything is going to take some time.
And some money.
And some money, yeah, a lot of money. But I think we're entering the more rational stage of the discussion now.
In your years that you've been working with native species, invasive species, habitat, et cetera, what's your general perception of the health? And again, I'm asking you to make a general statement here. I know it varies quite a bit from lake to lake, but the health of our Great Lakes compared to maybe 20, 30 years ago.
I'm seeing good things and I'm seeing bad things. And, you know, the health is always, you know, it's always a lot of opinion as to what people want to see out there. And, you know, invasive species are a good example about that. I mentioned the sculpin earlier. This is a small fish, just a few inches long, lives on the bottom. And we're seeing declines in that because of the round goby. The flip side is bass love to eat gobies. And we now have more smallmouth bass than ever probably in the Great Lakes. And they're big and they're fat and they're healthy because they're eating all these gobies. So it kind of depends on your perspective as to what's good, what's bad. Now, overall, I think we're slowly getting better. I think because there's a lot of interest in cleaning up, there's been a lot of money available to do a lot of these cleanups, but it's a very slow process.
Yes, yeah, slow, but one thing that I've noticed in talking to guests like you, though, is that increasingly there are more and more organizations, and I know you'd collaborate at Shedd with a great number of organizations. There are so many organizations that are committed to the preservation and enhancement of our Great Lakes that seem to be collaborating, networking, communicating, and doing research projects together, and that's encouraging.
It is, and I totally agree, because nobody is big enough to do projects over the entire Great Lakes. I mean, once again, it's just a huge ecosystem. So you have to work with others. You have to work with federal agencies. You have to work with state agencies. You need the local communities. I mean, we need everybody involved in this.
And part of what Shedd does is with your exhibits and your research and your focus on conservation is to maybe ensure that future generations are, equally, if not more, committed to our Great Lakes and our inland waters than past generations have been.
Yeah, correct. No, that's a big part of it too. You know, we want to bring people in, show the appreciation of that, and then pass that news on to our sons and daughters.
I've been talking with Dr. Philip Willink. He is the senior research biologist for the Shedd Aquarium in Chicago, and works with the Daniel P. Harther Center for Conservation and Research. Dr. Willink, a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Our mission is to be your personal network for life.
Scott Westerman leads the Michigan State University Alumni Association.
Sing our love for alma mater.
So what that means is when you graduate from college, we'll help you find your first career. When you move to any city, anywhere, we'll help you connect and settle. If you're mid-career and want to reinvent yourself, we'll help you find a new passion. And if you need advice or a friend anywhere in the world, the MSU Alumni Association will connect you with the 500,000 Spartans out there that are always ready to take your call.
Join the Michigan State University Alumni Association online at alumni.msu.edu.
And thy praises
alumni.msu.edu.
MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
People should know that AgBio Research is really the first front at MSU dealing with environmental issues and natural resources issues.
Dr. Steve Papke leads MSU AgBio Research. More than 300 scientists from six MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
MSU AgBio Research really is changing the face of science. If we can do that right, we create economic opportunities here in Michigan and opportunities for our researchers to make some really interesting discoveries.
Our goal is to generate economic prosperity, sustain natural resources, and enhance the quality of life for all.
We're MSU AgBio Research.
Visit agbioresearch.msu.edu. MSU AgBio Research is changing the face of science.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.